to On the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. Here, this is the place where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Welcome home, Brains.
Coming to you straight from San Diego, California, let's welcome our host, April Mahoney.
It speaks to your character, your individuality, because again,
absolutely,
someone can wear this plain, someone can scarf it, hat it, belt it, all of that, and it's it's an expression of who you are, and we are expressing who we are here on the edge with our guest today, Samita
Bhattacharjee.
Okay, she's amazing. She is an eco-friendly sustainability designer for clothes and fashion. We're going to talk to her about the different fabrics. We're going to talk to her about how she got involved, her transition from living in India and moving to Australia. There's so much to cover. I can't wait to have her here on the edge. Welcome, Samita.
Thank you very much, April. Thanks for having me.
Oh, yes. I'm so excited. And Brains, I am wearing one of her caftans.
Yes.
You know, I put on a hat this time. The last time I wore it with a belt. The other day I had it on and I put it over my swimsuit as I was lounging in the think tank. So versatile. So let's dial back and start with your story. How did you come from India to Australia and then become a fashion designer?
Oh, it's been a long story. I'm quite a globetrotter. So I have lived and worked out of several countries. So initially, you know, we were in England and the Middle East, and then I went back to India. I worked there for a while. Then we were in the beautiful New Zealand, and from New Zealand, I have landed in Australia. I've been here for a while now in Australasia for about 20 years. So I'm very much a Kiwi Aussie. So that's how it's happened, you know, and, even with fashion, that's a long story. Should I tell you how I got into fashion?
Absolutely. We want to know what color and all the details.
Yes, of course. All the tiny little spicy details of my life, I'll share with you. So I, as you know, it happens with most creative people that you are into crafts and you're into, you know, design right from childhood. And thankfully, we had no PlayStations and thank God for that. So we would spend long summer holidays just doing different kinds of art and crafts. So probably that's where it all started. But as you mentioned, I'm of Indian origin and I come from a community where, you know, if you're a good girl, you're a good girl and you are good at, you know, you are a good student, you are ducks in class and you are the head girl of your school, you do not become a fashion designer or a glorified tailor. So I did the usual drill, you know, masters, etc. in politics, economics, etc. I went on and on and on. White collar jobs, I was set for a, you know, if you're a good girl in back in India, you have to, and in especially, you know, this is, I'm talking about the 80s, for instance, you became a banker, you became a civil servant, a doctor, an engineer, you did not become a fashion designer. But at some point in my life, there's this tremendous attachment to white collar jobs, the stereotypical white collar jobs, but it wasn't me. At some point, I had to stop and I decided that I had to do something that would keep my, you know, my creative juices flowing, you know, keep me inspired, I needed to feel alive. And that's when I decided to opt for fashion design. So I did all my, you know, my degrees, my diplomas in fashion from premier institutions.
Wow.
And I was wearing my rose-tinted glasses. I thought I'd revolutionize the world of fashion. That wasn't meant to be. I was straight out of school, design school. I was thrown into the a sweatshop kind of scenario when I was working for the companies, you know. So I was supervising men and women who would be sewing, say, buttons onto 10,000 shirts overnight, you know. So that's when I saw what was happening to these men and women. You know, if you're just doing that, you become totally dehumanized, you know, mechanized, you know, you become a robot. So no creative satisfaction, no wellness factor, nothing. And that's when I decided that I had to do something about it. And I must at this point mention that I got tremendous support from my other half, who just told me that, why don't you begin something of your own, you know, where you can apply your ideals, your, you know, what you are setting out to do, what you feel so strongly about. And then that's when I decided that I would focus on sustainable fashion. And for me, I must clarify at this point that normally you would think sustainability, a normal layperson would associate sustainability with the environment, the flora and the fauna, the air, the water. But for me, sustainability is also about people, you know.
Right.
So we need to sustain our people. And this will probably resonate with you, April, because you also come from a traditional community. And I think that we need to...
I don't know how traditional it was.
But I'm probably right. Going back, you know, right into your roots. And anyway, so what I want to preserve is are the people, the communities, the legacy and the heritage that we have, you know, that's been handed down, not written on pen and paper, but it's been handed down from generation to generation to generation. I want to preserve all of that for future generations to see and learn from. Exactly. So that's sustainability for me. I mean, you know, it's slightly differently defined, but that's what I believe sustainable fashion should be about. Yes.
Well, a couple things that I want to touch on that you said. Number one, you emphasize good girl. And, you know, Indian girls are good girls, you know.
Yep.
But there's a lot of people in India, and there's a lot of competition there, and there's a lot of push and drive for you to branch out and to be stellar. So congratulations on that. But
simply,
I don't know why they gave you any gruff about being a fashion designer, because, you know, I got these, my girlfriend sent me these from India. These are absolutely gorgeous. And they are so much a fashion icon. I mean, you know, with Bollywood and just the colors and the textures and the accessories that you wear. So it is a fashion capital of the world.
Absolutely. I mean, the skill sets that we have in India every time. I mean, I have been in fashion, as you know, for a very long time now. But every time I go back and I work with my artisans, I am amazed at the skill sets, at what they are capable of producing. So, but this is something which should be done by, like, you know, not someone who's, you know, all set for a glorious career, you know. So you have to be, as I mentioned, there's this tremendous attachment to white collar jobs. So, in the 80s, and it's changed a lot now over 20 years, hopefully it has, but it wasn't something who was acing all the exams, who was a good student, would aim at doing. You became the most preferred careers were probably you became an engineer or a doctor. If not, then you could join banking or civil services.
Right.
And then things like graphic design, fashion design, graphic design didn't exist in so many words, but you had commercial art and fine arts. So that kind of was, those kind of options were marginalized. So that's what happened. But then I wanted to break out of those stereotypes. I wanted to destroy those stereotypes and break out of the mold. And I managed to do that a little later in my life, you know, after I had done, as I mentioned, my first set of bachelor's and master's. That's when I realized that this had to stop. I couldn't go on, you know, crunching numbers. I have nothing against bankers. They are very accomplished people.
But that's not for me.
Not for
me. That also set the groundwork for you to be a very successful manufacturer, distributor, designer, because you understand the mechanics of how business works. So it was really kind of the perfect blend and the perfect marriage for you. And sustainability, thank you so much, because I am going to be featuring a book written by my best friend. Mm-hmm. And it is called Behind the Seams. And what that book is basically talking about is the manufacturing industry of clothing and sweatshops and what is going on and the dehumanization. You know, I went to Los Angeles not too long ago, and I had an opportunity to go into one of these buildings, and it's horrifying. I mean, you have these young kids, and this is in Los Angeles. You have these young children, again, like you said, sewing buttons on 10,000 by hand.
Yeah.
10,000 shirts to be sold for these designers at exorbitant costs, and they are making far below minimum wage. So not only are you talking about the sustainability of individuals, but you also put an additional spin on that with talking about eco-friendly fabric.
Absolutely.
Speed on that.
Yeah. So see, these two things go hand in hand. I cannot talk about sustaining humans without humans cannot be sustained if we do not sustain the environment, you know. So you have to select the right kind of inputs. You have to talk about eco fabrics. You have to not only talk about eco fabrics, you also have to use eco fabrics in your products. And I'm a speaker. I speak on different platforms. There are several myths about sustainability. First of all, April, I'll touch on what you just said. And I'm glad you said that you went into one of the factories in LA and you found inhuman conditions. And this has been, I want to point out that, you know, unfair treatment doesn't happen only in developing countries or poor countries.
Right.
This kind of discrimination can happen anywhere in the world, first and foremost. Secondly, with eco-textiles, a lot of people feel that natural fabrics are eco, you know, they are organic, they are okay to use. But that's what I want to point out. For instance, cotton is not sustainable, just generic cotton, because cotton is one of the most polluting fabrics that we come across just by itself, because it guzzles water, requires a lot of water for cultivation, and then the fertilizers and pesticides. So if you are not aware of all of that, if you do not stay away from pesticides, chemicals, you know, irrigation, so then cotton becomes the worst offender in the textile world. So we have to take into account that we work with organic cotton and it's naturally fertilized. So you can put legumes, for instance, you know, in between the crops, you can put a crop of legumes. You can have irrigation from rainwater. So it's rain fed. So all of these things, there are several myths around organic textiles. There's a lot of what we call greenwashing. So, you know, people are just saying, oh, this is organic, that's organic, everything's organic these days, because as we say, sustainable has become fashionable.
Right.
So, you know, there's a lot of green. So it's kind of those gray areas we have to, you know, if we have to identify and we have to remove all those, you know, the misconceptions about organic textiles, the misconceptions about sustainability. So any organic textile should be certified organic textile. So for instance, I have got certification for my organic textiles. It's an international independent agency which certifies your textile. So it's kind of validated that you are using organic cotton. Similarly, for ethical production, I have SEDEX certification. So if you, as a consumer, you can ask questions. So is this certified organic? Is this certified fair trade or ethical? So as a consumer, just try and ask questions and you'll make the world a better place for yourself and for me and for everyone else.
When you were talking about that, you know, you used cotton as an example. And as we were in the green room, we were talking, I talked about bamboo. I am a big fan of hemp fabrics. I'm a big lover of bamboo sheets. Oh my God. It's like the more I wash them. But as you said, you know, hemp, people, we're not talking about marijuana. We're talking about the fiber from the hemp plant. Yeah. It uses about, well, they say about 10% less than cotton, but like bamboo, is it hard to make it pliable, to break it down so that you are able to make it into a fabric? Because, you know, you've got hemp creams, you've got, you know, different types of medicine,
food,
different type of fabric,
food,
right? But then with bamboo, same thing, but I can see, you know, a stick of bamboo could be very difficult to break down. You need maybe chemicals. And if you use those chemicals, that is no longer organic, that is no longer eco-friendly.
No. There's a question mark about bamboo. And I have attended several workshops where I have seen like two groups kind of fighting with one another. And one person is saying if bamboo is sustainable, so is rayon or viscose, because both viscose and bamboo, they go through this, you know, it's a similar process when you are breaking down the fiber and when it's being formatted into textile, you are using sulfides, you know, sulfur-based chemicals. And it's not, if bamboo is sustainable, so is viscose. So there's a debate going on, and you can have certified bamboo, but hemp is things like hemp, things like peace silk, you know, non-violent silk. These are authentic organic cotton, for instance, linen. These are tested and tried. Yeah, you love all of us. We all love linen. So these are tested and tried organic fabrics. So there are several options. There are new fabrics. Anyone wants to talk to me about that? We are making fabric from cornstarch. We are making fabric from soya, from lotus. There are several fabrics, some of the fabrics with medicinal properties. So yes, the options are, you know, eco leather. We are making leather out of coconut. We are making leather out of pineapple. So options are emerging. Yes, some of them have like soya silk, still has limitations. Some of them have limitations, but those limitations will be, you know, eased out over a period of time. I'm pretty confident about that. So it's not that there isn't option. As a consumer, we also, as a producer, and also as a consumer, we have to make the right choices.
We do. You know, silk. When I was in China, I went to a silk manufacturer. And to actually see, you know, the silk originally spun into this little ball and then the beautiful fabrics. I want to ask you two more questions. One question is about dyeing of fabrics.
Yeah.
That can also change it from being eco-friendly to being something else. And there's different types of dyes that you can use. What do you use to kind of bring out the beautiful colors? I mean, because, you know, these colors are beautiful.
Thank you. We would primarily use vegetable dyes. Now, I know if the moment I say vegetable dyes, some people would say, oh, it doesn't, you know, it you cannot fix vegetable dyes. So there'll be a certain amount of bleeding, you know, loss of color. And initial loss of color and progressive loss of color. As I said, these kind of things have shortcomings. And if you cannot use vegetable dyes, because as I mentioned, there are limitations there, you can also make sure that the factory has an effluent treatment plant. So all of our factories, I manufacture out of my own facility. And this is the, by law, we have to have an effluent treatment facility. So all of the dyes are treated and before they reach the water bodies, they are made, they are rendered non-toxic. So they are not polluting the water bodies. Wow. You know, it's not happening, you know, with leather production. Everything goes into the water. And the flora and the fauna, the fish, the turtles, everything is getting destroyed by all of that, you know. So that shouldn't happen, eh? First priority, if you can use vegetable dyes, as a consumer, you might have to wash it separately, hand wash. But if you cannot use vegetable dyes, you can use, have an effluent treatment plant. And with printing, you use digital printing. You know, for digital printing, the ink can be eco-friendly. Digital printing has no effluents. First of all, it opens up options. You can have several colors just at one time. Secondly, it's waste-free. So, and it's non-toxic. So toxic, and it gives you brilliant, vibrant prints. So digitally printed fabric, yes, it's a little more expensive. That's why, you know, organic clothing, eco-friendly clothing become a little expensive, but that's okay. If you take into account that it's not harming yourself, your body, your children, or it's not polluting the environment. So that's a small price to pay.
And everything that is organic will dissolve, or it should.
Anyway. Absolutely. Yeah, that's the whole thing.
Maybe you can help me with this.
Yeah.
I'm in the process of going through my closet for the third time. You know, and my mother has this thing about, oh no, don't throw that away. I may wear it, I may use it. You know, what do you think about getting rid of your old clothes? Oh, 80% of, what is it? It's the 80-20 rule. Women wear 20% of their clothes 80% of the time. It's like those jeans. They're comfortable. That's the first thing you grab for. That t-shirt, that's the first thing you grab for. And you've got a plethora of things to choose from in your wardrobe,
which you don't use.
don't wear. I was so embarrassed. I found 3 pairs of shoes that still had the price tags on them. I had never put them on. And then one pair, I went to zip them up and the zipper was broke. So they were of no value and they've been sitting there forever. What do you think we should do with the clothes? Should we pack them up and ship them off or take them to the Salvation Army? What do you do with your old clothes?
I'd give you 2 slogans, you know, 2 mantras. Okay, the first thing is the 3 R's. So reduce, reuse, and recycle. Okay, so when you buy, make a list or think very hard, you know, be informed, be wise about what you buy. So right at the outset, invest in good quality clothing. Just do not buy the $5 because it's a herd mentality. You know, everyone's buying those $10 right. T-shirts. So I'll go and get myself a, and that's how it's merchandised. You know, it's a heaps of T-shirts on a table and, you know, on a trestle table, and everyone's rummaging through that. Don't do it. You know, just step back. Secondly, recycle. So we are making engineered clothes. Say, for instance, an oversized boyfriend jacket, you know, you can repurpose. You can make something out of that, you know. The third thing is recycle. So I tell you how to, with the second and the third, if your mom might remember, we may not, but your mom or grandmom, there used to be a slogan in the 1940s, like post-war or around the Second World War, it's make, do, and mend. So if you are just, if you've lost a shirt's lost a button, just don't throw it away. You know, I was talking to some artisans over the weekend, and they are making little ropes with, it's called spool knitting. So with leftover wool, they are making all of that. So try to mend your clothes. Just don't throw away, right? You know, that's how the genres of applique or patchwork came into being, because they were, you know, we were using patchwork to mend our jeans, you know, if right. it has a rip or a tear. So you can use all of that. Now with recycling, you can, why not? You've got girlfriends, April, you've got friends. Yeah. So
I've got tons of brains, right?
Yeah, tons of brains. So the ones that are physically close to you or even virtually, let's do this. I mean, you know, have a swap party. You know, what you might not need, your girlfriend might need. I'm just doing a big cull of my not so many of my clothes. I'm quite careful with what I keep and buy. My daughter, being a young woman, she spends a lot on clothes, and I'm doing a big cull. So I'm getting rid of clothes, but I have asked my friends to come over, take a look. You know, some of them are really, really petite. So maybe they can fit into what, maybe the short skirts or the shorts.
Right.
Maybe their daughters would have use for that. So why don't you can have a girls' night in? You know, you can all get together and have a glass of wine and have a swap party. You know,
even design bags. Okay, and tell me the third thing.
Yeah. Third thing, you can take your clothes to some of the stores which are taking back your clothes.
Right,
and they're
right.
Giving you a discount for, you know, you can give it to them. I'm right now, I've just landed an order where I'm making swimwear out of recycled yarn. So the basic fabric we are making out of recycled clothes that we've taken the yarn out of those clothes, and we are remanufacturing the fabric. So I've given you quite a few pointers.
You have given me some great suggestions. And let me tell you also, yarn, I am going to be hosting a knitting and crochet party online.
Wonderful.
That is coming back with a vengeance. It is
absolutely
such a stress reliever. There is such talent that it takes to be able to do these beautiful creations out of yarn. And it's wonderful. I love the idea of a swap party. I've got designer bags that I don't want to be bothered with trying to sell online, that you could swap, and it's brand new. You can refurbish them. I love the idea of what you're saying about mending your clothes, because I'm not a sewer. My daughter is an amazing fashion designer and a costume designer. My husband taught her how to sew, because his mother taught him how to sew.
Exactly.
So I give my things to them to mend, because I don't sew. But what do you think about this distressed clothing and these jeans? I'm telling you, they have jeans here, I'm sure over there in Australia too, $500 with holes in them, bleached and distressed. What is that all about? I don't get it.
Well, bleaching is not sustainable. So I wouldn't, unless, like, you know, you have to be very careful when you bleach your clothes. But, you know, this whole genre of distressed clothing, it actually derives from punk fashion. And there are some punk fashion designers, the anti-fashion. So it's April, I can give you an extempo kind of lecture on the 60s and the 70s fashion, which was a reaction to the traditional fashion. And there are fashion designers I respect. So if you go back to Vivienne Westwood, followed by, you know, Alexander McQueen. And then I just interviewed, like yourself, I have my Learn with Sumita channel, which is more fashion focused. And I interviewed Jenny Bannister, who is supposed to be the Vivienne Westwood of Australia. She's a legend. So they actually created this complete genre of anti-fashion. So when you're talking about distressed clothing, it's a reaction, because till then fashion was kind of confined to the upper echelons of the society, you know, the rich and the famous. But in late 60s onwards, there was a reaction against fashion. And that was anti-fashion, which was, you know, if you've seen movies like West Side Story and all, there was an entire movement was a reaction to the tradition, the society that was pretty much, you know, controlled by the upper echelons, the haves and the have-nots, kind of. They did not become they did not take up weapons, but they used fashion, they used music, they used several other, it was a creative expression of their angst, you know, what they felt against the stereotypical fashion. So the entire genre of your ripped jeans and the dog collars and the spiked jewelry, you can trace it back to anti-fashion. So it's okay so long as it's not polluting. You can rip up your, that's another way you can, you can recycle your clothing, make a few holes in your jeans and that's it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's absolutely a trendsetter and people are loving it.
Yeah.
Where do you come up with your designs? I mean, you know, when you're sketching and you're thinking about something beautiful to create, where does that inspiration come from?
That's a very good question, April, and I've been asked this question several times. It's you have to open your third eye. You know, the Hindu god Shiva has a third eye. So you have to open that. Wonderful. So as I mentioned, I've been asked this question many a times. You can get inspiration from everything, and it's an instinct. And the more you read, you travel, you visit art galleries, you visit museums. So open your third eye, like the Hindu god Shiva. So there's no formula. There's no equation that, you put two and two together. In design, two and two is not always four. It can be zero. It can be 22. So you have to look beyond and learn to look beyond. Okay, so, this dress, this scarf.
Beautiful.
You have to look beyond what is obvious to just about everyone else. What sets you apart? Why should people buy a t-shirt from Samita or from April Mahoney? What's the point of difference? Okay,
So
that's how you create. Yeah.
And then, like you said, culture and influence and travel and
absolutely
what's going on trendy. We have to be very forward thinking because we're moving into the 22nd century.
What absolutely.
Is that going to look like? And then retro fashion are very important. So there's a lot in the fashion world. Well, Samita, you have been a wealth of information. Thank you so much. And now I am really going to be a lot more parsnickety when it comes to what I buy, because I do that now. When I shop, I look at it, I try it on, I say, you know what? I get 10 wears. When I buy something now, I wear it 10 times, different ways, because I want cost per wear. I really want to get the value, but I'm buying classic pieces.
Absolutely.
I'm not buying the junk. Well, I can't say that because there's some cute junk.
Yeah, that's okay. That's okay, especially with accessories.
But exactly. But if you buy a nice classic piece, you will be able to do that. So I went to your website, and you have everything from soup to nuts. Clothing, you have beautiful scarves, you have swimwear, you have bags, you have a full line. Brains, I want you to go, and it is pronounced Deidra, right?
It's Deidaa.
Okay.
.com.au.
Yes, I want you to go in and purchase some things. They're very affordable.
Thank you.
The shipping and the receiving is wonderful. She wraps it beautifully for you, makes you feel so
special.
Thank you. She made me feel very special. She have some accessories shipped here that I'm going to be able to feature and show you.
Absolutely.
And I may even be very generous and raffle something off to one of my brands because I want them to share in the experience. So again, please, Samita, tell us how to get in contact with you and your online information. It's going to be at the end of this video and also down at the bottom, because I want people to really enjoy in this. You have created something that is sustainable, eco-friendly, and you did it with a lot of love. So I thank you for that.
Yes, I'm very passionate because, you have to have the passion for fashion. It's a cliche, but unless you have the passion, you cannot last in fashion. It's very, it takes a lot of commitment. So if you want to get in touch with me, you could send me an email at info@deidaa.com.au. So it's deidaa.com.au. I, of course, you can shop at my website, my web shop, but I also wholesale and manufacture. So if you're looking for eco gifts and if you are a if you have a store or if you are a retailer in somewhere, you know, among April's audience, if any of you want to stock my products, I can also custom manufacture for you. So if you want to do all of that, and don't forget to subscribe to my channel, which is Learn with Samika.
Absolutely.
April, I must, because it was just to support my eco gifts business, but now I have started, you know, I spread the word about sustainability on different platforms and through Learn with Samita. So please do that. And, you know, I interview fashion designers, wellness professionals, and also, you know, I've right now we are doing a giving back to the regional Australia community. So all of that you'll find on Learn with Samita. And of course, my eco gifts, my eco products. If you want to buy for yourself, you want to stock it in one of your stores or get me to manufacture something for you, we entertain small and large clients. So that's okay. I mean, I mentor startups. So that's about it. April, I think I have given enough information. So,
well, you can never give enough information. Let's take a picture together.
Yes, of course.
Hello, Brains, and thank you so much for being here. I need you to go and subscribe to my channel as well as Samita's. Put some likes, put some comments. Let us know exactly what's on your mind, because sometimes we think we know everything, but we don't know what you need. And so if there's something that you're looking for, more information, this will be a great class in home economics that she may, you know, be able to come in and talk about with the students. Because again, the art of sewing and needlework is a lost art, but it's something that we will always need. So
yeah,
thank you again, Samita, for being here on The Edge with me. I value you, I appreciate you, and I wear you.
Yeah, wonderful. Thank you so much, April, and thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure, an absolute pleasure talking to you.
All right, bye-bye.